You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Congratulations. You found it.
You know what time it is.
This is New York Game Day. It's 3 hours of the most informative and entertaining NFL news in the league. Now here's former NFL defensive lineman Chris Canty, former Jets GM and ESPN insider Mike Tannenbaum, and your host, Anita Marks.
Welcome in. It is New York Game Day here on 98.7 ESPN, week 11. And we've got a great show lined up for you. Excited to have Mike Tannenbaum on. Chris Canty is not here this morning. But phone lines are open, 800-919-3776. The phone number you want to get on board with you for the next 3 hours. I know the Giants are on a bye week, but you've got a Jets team that has traveled across the country to take on the Chargers. And who knows, possibly the Offensive Rookie of the Year and Justin Herbert. Mike Tannenbaum joins us. Mikey, hi.
Good morning. How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yeah?
It should be a great 24 hours of football, and what a great time to be a sports fan, right, Anita? We had the Masters last week. We had unbelievable college football. We're in NBA free agency. NBA season's going to be starting soon. So for all the things that, you know, the pandemic did that has hurt us and our country, you know, from a sports perspective, heading into Thanksgiving week and some massive primetime football games. So a lot of things to be thankful for.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And hoping everybody out there is safe and healthy. All right, let's dive right into this Jets game, right? We know what time, like they're 0-9. I get that they're coming off of a bye. They're traveling across the country to take on Justin Herbert and Anthony Lynn, who of course we know spent some time here. So he's going up against his former team. No Sam Darnold. In fact, I'll be surprised if Sam Darnold ever graces a Jets uniform again. Curious to get your thoughts on that. It seems like their entire secondary has either been cut or has been placed on IR. So I don't even, like, I'm looking at the list of DBs that are going to be starting today against a very talented Justin Herbert. I don't even know who they are. But yet, there are a number of, there's sharp money on the Jets at +9.5. And there are some handicappers that actually are putting some money down that the Jets are just going to straight up beat the Chargers on the money line. You get that at +170, +180. I'm very perplexed by this. You know, a part of me is like, okay, I understand the point differential in regard to how the Chargers have lost is very slim, which tells you, and I know Anthony Lynn gets destroyed week in and week out, that, you know, he loses games in the fourth quarter, his coaching stinks, yada, yada, yada. But this is a whole nother animal. That, you know, those are games against the Saints. Those are games against, you know, Kansas City and like excellent teams, not against a team like the Jets. That, and I'll use the word tank. I'll use it. I think they're tanking for Trevor Lawrence. I do believe that's what's happening right now. So I'm curious, Mike, how do you see this game playing out today?
Yeah, well, you know, you touch on a number of things there. Look, I think the Chargers are clearly the better team in the league, better team of the two. And if they play 10 times, I think they win 7 or 8 of them. Just from a standpoint of Justin Herbert, to me, has a chance to be an elite quarterback. He's really gotten off to a great start. You know, Anita, they're doing a really good job of possessing the ball. They have the ball for over 32 minutes every game. And what that does is that allows them to control the line of scrimmage, minimize what they have to do on defense, and on a yards per game basis, which I know isn't everything, and it's not bringing into things like efficiency. They're third. You look at third down conversion through, you know, two and a half quarters of the season. They're 8th in the league on third down conversion. So there's a lot of things that I like about what they're doing on offense. I think defensively, where they've been hurt, and I've been in this situation before, like from a cap perspective, so much of their resources have gone into Joey Bosa. He hasn't been able to play. He's been hurt. and hopefully for them, he'll make some meaningful impact at some point. But that's really hurt them because a lot of their schemes and what Gus Bradley likes to do, their defense coordinator, is based on a four-man pass rush, which they just haven't been able to get home with. Nobody can replace Joey Bosa, so I don't want to criticize them unfairly. So they are the better team. They're home. And I think in terms of the Jets, I'm disappointed that Sam Darnold's not playing. At some point, you know, football players have to play football during football season. That's the old Coach Parcells line. And I don't know if they're tanking because I'm sure the players and coaches that are going out there today are going to do everything they can within reason to win. Now, with that said, do I think, you know, the front office and ownership has an eye towards the future? Of course. And that's why we saw things like the Steve McClendon trade or the Avery Williamson trade. So it's a little bit of a split approach, in my opinion, which is those players and coaches are going to go out there and do everything they can to do to win the game. But at the end of the day, I'm sure in the back of ownership's mind, based on what has happened this year, if they could come out of this with the first pick and have a transformational quarterback, that would be great. But Anita, keep this in mind, like, just because they have the first pick overall doesn't mean Trevor Lawrence is going to be a Jet next year.
Ooh. Okay. Well, nice little nugget you just threw out right there, Mike Tannenbaum. Well, yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think that's because the Jets don't select him and trade down because the plethora of picks that one could accumulate for a Trevor Lawrence? Or do you think, are you hearing that the Jets are interested in possibly a different quarterback, or do you think Trevor Lawrence won't want to go? Which, by the way, I was trying to do some do you know who's repping him? Is it Brady's agent? Who's repping Trevor Lawrence? Do we know? Has he been able to commit to anyone because he's still in college? How does that work, Mike?
Yeah, so he can't have an agent right now because he's still in college. But here's my point. We're in a new age for these superstar players, and he has unusual leverage going back to Eli Manning when he was drafted by the Chargers. So my point is this. Trevor Lawrence is from Georgia. He's playing in South Carolina at Clemson. And he may just not want to come to the Northeast. It may not have anything to do with the Jets or the organization. It may just have to do with the fact that, hey, I'm from the South. And, you know, I went through that a decade ago with trying to convince Brett Favre to come to the Jets. Brett Favre was from Mississippi. He had an option to go play in Tampa Bay. And it took a Herculean effort on our part to try to get this trade done with Green Bay because Brett Favre was just didn't want to come to the Northeast. It's not for everybody. You know, I'm a Northeast native. I love it. I thrive on it. It's where my family, you know, that's where our roots are. But it's not for everybody. And if I'm him and I look at the next 2 years and see that Tampa Bay, Atlanta, New Orleans, Jacksonville all need quarterbacks, I may just say, you know what? I'm not going back to Clemson. I'm going to sign with Nike for a massive endorsement deal. And I'll wait a year. So even though, you know, the Jets could have the first pick, so much can happen. I know going back to a long time ago, we got to the Jets in 1997. We had the first pick in the draft. Peyton Manning went back to Tennessee. So my point is, like, you know, we're sitting here, you know, coming into Thanksgiving, Anita. We are a million miles away from the NFL draft.
Well, I understand that. Regardless, we use the word tank and we use it loosely to say that, you know, but whether it's Trevor Lawrence or whether it's a plethora of picks that any given team is going to offer the Jets for a Trevor Lawrence or even a Fields. I mean, you know, to be able to end up with the number one overall pick this year with the talent at quarterback that's, I mean, you know, I had David Purdom, who oversees he's kind of our Vegas insider and news and notes where a lot of the money flow is going in Vegas. And we were talking about the Heisman. I mean, you know, this is a year where, of course, because of COVID-19 and Trevor Lawrence missed some games and whatnot, you know, there's some question marks as to who's going to win the Heisman this year. And obviously it's going to be a quarterback, but there's a lot of talk and speculation because there's a lot of good quarterback play. So if ever there was a year that, you know, you're a Jets team who's looking to rebuild and move on from Sam Darnold, this is the year, whether it's another quarterback that they have their eye on or at least getting the number one overall pick and being able to accumulate a lot of draft picks for a team that they're looking to trade up.
Yeah, and they'll wind up with one of the top three picks, but you know, these things are razor thin right now. And if they beat the Chargers today, which they certainly could, if Jacksonville loses, depending on strength of schedule, they can wind up, you know, with the second pick. And that's why I always believed in, hey, let's try to win as many games as possible each and every year. That's how you establish credibility. That's how you build a program. And that's how you make progress at the end of the day. And every place I've been at, that's that gave us the foundation for success. So there's things that the Jets are trying to accomplish, certainly off the field. But I'm telling you, on the field, Anita, they're going out there today to try to do everything they can to win that game. And again, I'm sure Sam Darnold's shoulder's far from 100%, and he shouldn't do anything that would put his future in jeopardy in terms of, you know, long term. But at some point, if he's cleared, I'm sure, as you know, other Jet fans, hey, let's go see what he can do. Let him go play. Like, every rep is a critical rep for him right now. Again, no training camp, no off-season program. He's a young player. He needs to get better. We're seeing, you know, the other team in town right now. Daniel Jones is getting better. Every rep is a good one. And, you know, we saw last week for the first time against Philadelphia, no fumbles, no interceptions. And there's a lot to be excited about if I'm a New York Giant fan. And my point is, you know, we know Sam Darnold has ability. Let's get him back out there. Let's see what he can do. Let's understand that there's going to be mistakes. And hopefully he's going to continue to get better. So, you know, Joe Flacco is not the answer long term for them.
He is Mike Tannenbaum. I'm Anita Marks. You're listening to New York Game Day. There is a wager out there that the Jets go 0-16, and you could get on that at plus 165. I'm all over it. When we get back, I'll tell you all the reasons why. Obviously, Mike T is not. I am calling up the Jet schedule right now. Sorry, my computer froze. I've been trying to get this going since the break. Hold on one second. Okay, here we go. Mike, you ready?
Yes. Man,
okay.
I am ready.
So at the Chargers today, home against the Dolphins, that Dolphins defense is just, they've just been absolutely sick. Against the Raiders, at Seattle, at the Rams, home against the Browns, and at the Patriots. So out of all those games, again, you could bet that the Jets are going to go 0-16 at plus 165. My thing is, why not throw a little coin on it? Yeah, I mean, but if there was one game out of all those games, if there's one game I would be a little concerned about, to me, it's the home game against the Browns. Browns, in my opinion, might be out of it at that point. You know, I'm not, their defense doesn't scare me. In fact, I think Philadelphia wins later on today. We'll get into that a little bit later. But out of all those games, probably the one that I think is the most winnable for the Jets is home against the Browns in week 16. I'm curious, out of the remaining games, what are the matchups that you're eyeing that you think they could win?
Well, I think it starts today. You know, you look at the two-win Charger team. The Chargers have beat the Bengals on opening day. They beat Jacksonville pretty handily by 10 points. And so I think it starts today. I think they have a, again, and we've heard Adam Gase say this, and I'm not apologizing for Adam because I think there's a lot of things that could be or certainly should have been better or different. But when you look at them with Perryman, Mims, and Crowder, those are three representative NFL receivers. So the weeks that they have that out there like they did against New England with Joe Flacco, I think they have a real chance, Anita, in any game because – it allows them to score. And we just talked about that a little bit, you know, with the Chargers, where you're controlling the ball for 32 minutes. You have a lot of yards per game. You're converting third downs. You're helping your defense. So I agree. They could certainly beat the Browns at home. They could win today. And look, you know, it's the NFL in 2020. Going out to Seattle isn't the same as playing Seattle in normal circumstances. Or the Raiders, you know, the Raiders are a little bit of a hard team for me to figure out. They're very up and down. So there's a few winnable games. And, again, if they win one game, and depending on the strength of schedule and some of these other tiebreakers, they could be have the second pick. And, again, what happens if, you know, Trevor Lawrence doesn't come out, which we all expect that he will? You know, you could be sitting there and you have the second pick and Justin Fields goes first, and now you're looking at Trey Lance or Kyle Trask or Mac Jones or Zach Wilson, good players. But I don't know, Anita. Like, I can't say that those – players are discernibly better than Sam Darnold.
Wow. Very, very interesting. You know, Mike, if I recall, like a few weeks ago, you and I were having this conversation, like, and we were both, you were kind of in agreement with me. Like, Trevor Lawrence is a no-brainer. He comes out, he's a no-brainer. So are you now second-guessing that? Or are you taking a step back from that? Are you?
No, I think it's 100% a no-brainer. I'm just saying that a lot can happen between now and April in terms of, is he going to be coming out? Is he going to
Let me ask you this, Mike. Are you getting wind of anything?
There is speculation out there that, you know, he's going to explore all his options, not only in terms of, like, coming out, but, you know, what he wants to do. And he hasn't picked an agent yet or anything like that. He's going through the process. Like, and all I'm saying is that once – let's assume that he's going to come out, because I think that's going to happen at the end of the day, even though he loves Clemson. My point is just a very fundamental one, which is it's been over a decade, but Eli Manning, Anita – decided that he did not want to play for the Charger organization. And I'm saying it could be for as reasons as basic as geographic concerns. I think what we're seeing is a new era of college sports where, because of things like name, image, and likeness and things changing, I think players are going to come out with more leverage, more power. And, you know, here's another variable. What happens if Dabo Swinney leaves Clemson and he goes to, call it the, you know, Team X in the NFL? You know, some people say, hey, he should go to Houston with, you know, Deshaun Watson. But what happens if he goes to Jacksonville? And what happens if the Jets have the first pick in the draft and Jacksonville has the second pick in the draft, but their head coach happens to be Dabo Swinney? Trevor Lawrence may just say, hey, look, don't draft me the Jets because I'm not going to go there. So my point is, if I'm a Jet fan, I understand why I would want the first pick, and I'm looking at a guy that could be Andrew Luck, and that's really exciting. I'm just saying, like, we have to pump the brakes because we're sitting here in November, and a lot of things may happen.
Let me ask you this, because it's been a hot second since we've seen a player do that, right? Like Eli Manning, right? Like you know, obviously there's been a number of in quarterbacks who've said, I don't want to go there, and of course we know what happened with Eli and Phillip Rivers and Brett Favre and all that stuff, Elway. But, you know, how much of a PR hit, I don't recall, I guess I'm coming back to you on this. Like, how much of a PR hit do you think that would be? Like, do you feel that we are in a day and age right now where if Trevor Lawrence was to come out and say, I don't want to go to the Jets, don't draft me. Let's just hypothetically speaking, let's say that scenario pans out. Let's just say Jets get number one, Jags get number two, Debo goes to Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence comes out and says, I want to stay with my guy. I want to go with Debo to Jacksonville. Don't draft me. How much of a PR hit do you think that he will take?
I don't think he really cares, and it lasts for about 10 seconds, because as soon as he goes to the city that he wants to go to, it's all about how he performs there. So he would be a hero in Jacksonville if he did that. Which is only a few hours from where he grew up.
He would be the Antichrist in New York. What's worse?
He
What's
wouldn't care.
Better?
Anita, he wouldn't care. You know, he lives a couple of hours from Jacksonville. That's where he's from. If he could be with his head coach, where he wants to live.
And again, is he from Jacksonville? Did he go to Bowles? Did he go to Bowles High School?
No. My point is he's from Georgia. He likes the South. And again, I'm just speculating here. I can tell you that 0% factor would be what he would be like when Eli Manning made the decision to say that he didn't want to go to San Diego to play for the Chargers. 0% of their inner circle cared what the San Diego fans thought of him. 0%. He got to New York. He won a couple Super Bowls. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame. Turned out to be a great decision for Eli and the Giants. So my point is, if that day ever came, and again, the other thing we have to remember now in this new era, Anita, is that he's going to have this decision with a 10-figure guarantee from an endorsement contract. So he's not dealing from a position of weakness. He's dealing from a position of strength.
800-919-3776. Let's go to Ira in Staten Island. Ira, welcome in.
Hey, good morning. Hello.
Good morning. Good morning, Ira. Welcome in.
Oh, I didn't know I was connected. Hey, but first of all, to you and everybody, a very blessed Thanksgiving, hopefully.
Same to you, Ira. Thank you.
A lot different. You know, Mike, I 100% agree with you. That's why I've been really focused on Justin Fields. I just get this strange feeling that Lawrence is going to stay down in the South. But let's get to today's game. Listen, anybody could win, you know, any given Sunday. It's just I don't see the Chargers letting Flacco sit back there the way Belichick did 2 weeks ago. I think they're going to try to generate some type of pass rush, and I think that could make it difficult. I don't think he's going to be able to just throw it down the field. But with Herbert, I love this kid come out of college. I watched him on Hard Knocks. I watched his games. You know, he's having a good year. They just haven't been found a way to close out games. But on paper, I mean, I just don't see how the Jets' secondary or their defense match up against Allen, Williams, and Hunter. And I think Ballage could have a big game today against the Jets. So, listen, you know, I'd like to see them win a game. I really don't want to go 0-16. But the bottom line here is I just don't see it. I think the Chargers win by double digits.
I'm with you, Ira. Mike?
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to Ira and all our listeners. Look, Bosa's been a massive loss for them. You know, we already talked about that. And Gus Bradley philosophically likes to play a lot more of that cover two, rush with four, keep everything in front of you. And Ira's bringing up a good point, which is what will the adjustment be? Will he change that approach given what happened, you know, what Flacco was able to do against a very talented Patriots secondary? So that's an interesting part of the chess match here. And there's no doubt, like I said earlier, I think the Chargers are the better team. But the one thing that we know that Joe Flacco can do is he could hit the home run and maybe they could keep it close with a couple of explosive plays. Kalen Ballage, somebody that we drafted in Miami, was a good pickup for them. And I think he fits that one-cut system of what Anthony Lynn likes to do offensively. So the edge to me is the Chargers. But, again, I do think without Bosa, that pass rush kind of, I would say, exposes some of their weaknesses in the secondary. Again, this is a team that doesn't have Derwin James, Chris Harris. They've had a number of injuries.
I believe Chris Harris is coming back today, by the way.
Oh, is he? Okay.
I believe so. Let me, in the break, I want to confirm that, and I will do that in the break. This is Football Talk Chalk, brought to you by F.W. Webb and Weil McLean. Anita Marks, Mike Tannenbaum, and you, 800-919-3776. Mike, let's talk about what, again, Giants on a bye this week. Hopefully enjoying it. Nice bye week to have as it leads into Thanksgiving. That's a nice bye week. But you've got Joe Judge, ruffling feathers yet again, fires offensive line coach Mark Colombo. And there were some reports out there, speculation that the two of them got into some kind of scuffle. Wouldn't say that it was they went to blows. It wasn't like a knockdown, drag-out fight. But Jordan Renan and a number of people are reporting that it got kind of physical, maybe some chest pumping. You know how that is. I don't know. Maybe you don't. But regardless, what is the? You just don't sound like you don't. You don't look like the fighting types. Actually, I don't know. I don't like. I see. Well, have you ever gotten to a fight like at a bar or something, Mike? Have you ever gone to blows at a bar? I could see you having one too many, and then like you getting into like a little scuffle outside as you're like walking to your car with a dude. I can see you doing that.
I could say I've never been in a bar fight. I've had disagreements in my life, but nothing like that. But let's transition to something much more germane, which is Joe Judge and Mark Colombo.
So, first things first. Have you ever had this situation before where you had coaches, whether it's on the practice field or in the offices, get physical with one another?
Never physical, but I've seen some very heated disagreements. Game day or otherwise in locker rooms, you got to understand like what's very unique about our sport and our industry, Anita, is look, we get a chance. We're very fortunate. We get to cover it and we get a chance to do it, depending on people's schedules, either every day or 2 to 3 times a week. But if you think about it, all that time and effort you put in, you get evaluated 16 times a year. That's it. Nothing else really matters. You could show progress, you could all these other things, but at the end of the day, it comes down to wins and losses on game day. So it's a very emotional situation. A lot of times, when you see losses mount. And I think in this situation, though, more specifically, I think what we're seeing is something that happens quite a bit, which is Joe Judge is coming in. He's trying to establish what's important to him and his program. And Jason Garrett is bringing his offense. He's bringing Mark Colombo, which is somebody he's familiar with. And when you're putting your staff together, if you're Joe Judge, you have to rely on Jason Garrett to say, hey, who do you like at offensive line? Who could help, you know, implement your scheme and your offense? And what happens is Joe Judge is sitting there seeing a lot of the great things that Coach Belichick did in New England with Dante Scarnecchia for 20, 30 years. And I'm sure the conversation is, hey, I want to implement, you know, these two or three like run concepts or, you know, pass protection concepts because I know they work. And I'm sure there's massive pushback from a guy like Mark Colombo, who was a good player, prideful guy, and says to Joe Judge that, hey, I know a lot more about offensive line play than you do, and hold me accountable. And, oh, by the way, we're getting better. And I'm sure what Joe Judge is saying is we could all get better. None of us have the answers. And I have this guy here, Dave DeGuglielmo, who I've happened to work with twice, both at the Jets and the Dolphins, who's a smart, talented guy, Anita, smart coach. He's available. Why not bring him in here? And, yeah, we're getting better, Coach Colombo, but why not add the best ideas we could possibly get for us as the Giants? And I'm sure that didn't go over well, and obviously the rest is history.
So thoughts on, and I haven't really heard anyone bring this topic up, like if Colombo was Jason Garrett's guy and Jason Garrett is the offensive coordinator, are you hearing anything in regard to, like, is Garrett upset or disappointed in how this played out and the fact that his offensive line coach is gone now? Like, how do you think that dynamic is affected? It has to be, right?
Yeah, it's a great point. And that's the one that I really want to hear from is Jason Garrett. Mm-hmm. Now, we know Jason's such a, you know, Jason tomorrow could go be the, you know, a UN ambassador. You know, he's beyond reproach. He'll always say and do the right thing. So I'm sure he'll just defer to the head coach on it. But I'm sure, you know, he's got to be asking himself some questions like, hey, I know this run game. I know these concepts. Again, that he's coached for over a decade in Dallas. And now he has to work with a guy, Dave DeGuglielmo, who knows, you know, more of that Patriot system. And a lot of it has to do with, like, run block concepts and double team at the point, which is something they really believe in. That's obviously been very effective. How they pass protect in terms of how they short set, how they try to establish, you know, a wall for Tom Brady to have a clean pocket. There's just some very basic fundamentals that they've done an incredible job of. So it'll be interesting to see how that gets married over the coming weeks. And in fairness, you do have to say that while they started off slow, I do think the Giant offensive line has actually been playing better.
I think this Giants team is playing better defensively. Listen, when you look at their roster, there's no big names out there that jump off the board at you. But one thing, and this is what we heard when Joe Judge was hired, Mike, was, you know, the physicality, the no BS type of approach that he's going to come in. And it's evident, right? Like the way that he handled things with Golden Tate, obviously with this. And you see the way that this defense is playing and their style of physicality and the identity. This is a much different identity for this Giants team. We haven't seen this in a while. And so it's evident. Again, I'm looking at the standings right now. Eagles 3-5-1. I think that tie just might save the Eagles in winning this division, Mike. I'm really intrigued how this is going to play out for the remainder of the season. The Giants 3-7, Washington 2-7, Dallas 2-7. Now the Eagles are taking on Cleveland today. Weather conditions are supposed to be bad. They get Zach Ertz back. You know Doug Peterson. He loves to play that two tight end set with Zach and, of course, Dallas Goedert, which I think is going to open up things for Dallas Goedert. And Cleveland is playing without Myles Garrett, who unfortunately has been tested positive for COVID-19. So prayers go out to him. Hopefully a speedy recovery. This is an excellent spot for the Eagles today. In fact, I like the Eagles at +3. Giants on a bye. So now the Eagles can create even more separation and go up to 4-5 if they do beat Cleveland today. Washington and Alex Smith are taking on Cincinnati. That could be a win for them. So, in essence, Washington could go to 3-7 today. And Dallas is in Minnesota taking on the Minnesota Vikings. I think they lose that game. And so I believe Dallas will end up, at the end of this week, 2-8. So just to kind of give you an idea of what, you know, what I'm anticipating to happen here. But it's really intriguing considering that this Giants team is still alive and very well can make it to the postseason. Any of these teams can make it to the postseason with a below 500 record, which is ridiculous. Your thoughts on how you think this division is going to play out, Mike?
Yeah, no, those are all fair points. I always try to say who has a chance to improve themselves between now and the end. One other X factor, my understanding is, you know, Myles Garrett will be out now for at least today. That really hurts Cleveland. He is a tremendous difference maker. So to the extent that game was a toss-up or it was in Cleveland or Philly's been struggling, I also give, you know, a pretty significant advantage now to Philadelphia just because Myles Garrett is that much of a difference maker, in my opinion. With that said, moving forward, I can eliminate Dallas because I don't see they have any sort of ways of improving. I think they're by far the worst team. And the other intriguing team to me is Washington because Alex Smith, you know, we could talk 3 hours about this story, Anita. Like, he almost lost his leg. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, he's playing better, and he hasn't played in a couple of years. But at one point, he was the first pick in the draft. And, look, would I take Daniel Jones over Alex Smith? Absolutely, you know, in terms of the future. But for this year, you know, Alex Smith may give them because of that defensive line and Alex Smith, I think Washington is a team you can't eliminate yet. And Philadelphia, it's really hard to – this is what's so hard about running a team. You know, I dealt with it to a much different degree with Mark Sanchez where we had great success early on. We gave him an extension and it fell apart. And I hope for Philadelphia that's not the case with Carson Wentz. But Carson Wentz was a player 2 years ago, Anita. You could have made an argument that, you know, he was a league MVP or certainly one of the bright young stars of our league. And now he is struggling. It is 12 touchdowns. It's inconceivable. So your points are really well taken.
Mm. Excuse me. I'm battling some allergies today. Let's take a look at the AFC East and Buffalo Bills at the top. They're 7-3. They're on a bye. You've got the Miami Dolphins. They're 6-3. They're taking on Denver. I think they win today. I think they go up to 7-3. Their defense, they're playing that zero blitz scheme where they disguise the deep safety. Even probably one of my favorite quotes coming out of last week was wide receiver Keenan Allen said, "We ran the ball in the second half, specifically in the fourth quarter, because Justin Herbert didn't know what was coming, and we were worried that he was going to make some bonehead play." So if they're confusing Mensa Justin Herbert, how do you think Drew Locke with a busted rib and is cares more about his TikTok dancing than anything else? How do you think he's going to fare against this Dolphins defense? Dolphins defense is sick. Patriots, they're going up against Houston. I think they have a chance to go to 6-5 as well. You could run all over Houston, and obviously that has been the bread and butter on the offensive side of the ball for the Patriots. And as we know, the Jets are the Jets. So with that being said, I'm curious. You could lay money down at plus money that the Miami Dolphins win this division based on what you've seen in the past 3 weeks with Tua now starting at quarterback and this Miami Dolphins defense. Would you lay that? Do you think the Dolphins win this division, Mike?
Look, they're playing really well. You know, they've obviously won 5 in a row. I wouldn't say that they win the division this year from a standpoint of when you score so many points on special teams and defense, that is hard to sustain. Now, look, they could still continue to turn the ball over, and they have made some really good offenses look bad, both the LA teams in particular. I think right now it's probably Buffalo's division to lose. But when you look at the point differential, you know, the difference is Miami's plus 69. Buffalo is only plus 7. So what does that say is that Buffalo's winning a lot of close games. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, when you go back to Keenan Allen's comments, the way you want to beat that scheme is you have to make them pay for the blitz. And, you know, working with Rex Ryan for all those years, he didn't like giving up the home runs, and nobody liked to blitz more than Rex. So you can do that as long as you can hold up on the back end. And Miami has two really good corners in Byron Jones and Xavier Howard, so that allows them, you know, to send more than you can block. But that is the one vulnerability. Now, can Denver exploit that? I doubt it. You know, Jerry Jeudy, you know, they have some really good young players. I don't think Noah Fant's playing today. They have explosive players, but I agree with you. Can Drew Locke process quick enough to figure out where to go with the ball? I would say that's a long shot, so I see why everybody likes Miami today. But at some point, that would be the way that you're going to have to beat Miami, is you're going to have to throw the ball over their head and make them pay, you know, for bringing more people than you can defend. But they've obviously done a very good job.
Really quick, Chris Harris coming off of IR and opens a 21-day window for him to return to the active roster. He'll replace Desmond King in the slot when healthy. So keep an eye on that. He's off of IR. There is a chance that Chris Harris does start for the Chargers today. We get back. We'll continue with your calls. 800-919-3776. Anita Marks, Mike Tannenbaum, and of course you. And again, this is Football Talk Chalk, brought to you by FW Webb and Weil McLean Heating Contractors. FW Webb is your one-stop source for top quality heating equipment and parts. One great example, Weil McLean Boilers. Turn to one of FW Webb's over 90 locations for unparalleled Weil McLean inventory. Also want to remind you, video chatting with the family this holiday season? Well, we've got the perfect guest for everyone's virtual gathering. New York Jets quarterback Sam Darnold is 98.7 ESPN Sam in the Fam Sweepstakes. Here's how you win. Send us a brief message telling us why Sam should hang out with your family for a 30-minute virtual huddle. Send that message to us at 987ESPN@gmail.com. That's 987ESPN@gmail.com. We'll choose the winners on December 9th. Who will each get a one-of-a-kind experience with friends and family to have a virtual hangout with Sam Darnold. It's all from our home, 98.7 ESPN for the hookup, and your home for the hangout, 98.7 ESPN. Mike, out of curiosity, if you were a Jets fan and you were to win that, what would be some of the questions you'd ask Sam in your virtual family hang out with him? What would be some of the questions you would ask Sam?
Well, I could go about it one of two ways, you know, from a just to get to know him standpoint. You know, he comes from a great family. I'd love to hear more about, you know, the values that his parents instilled in him and who he looked up to. But then I'd also ask him some really hard questions, which are, you know, Sam, why have things not worked out? You know, you were supposed to be this transformational franchise quarterback. Well, why has it not worked out? Have you done everything you can within reason to be the best quarterback you can be? Have you had hard and difficult conversations with your teammates to hold them accountable? Do they come in and stay late? Like, do you make sure that the standards are unyielding? Do you invest in them? You know, it was interesting when we traded for Santonio Holmes. I said to him, why is Ben Roethlisberger, why is he so successful? I'll never forget this, Anita. He said to me, he goes, offensive linemen don't block for Ben Roethlisberger. They die for him. Every offseason, he flew to the homes of each one of his offensive line teammates and brought them personalized gifts. You talk about engendering loyalty. Like, that's being a professional quarterback. And those are things that are never reported on or we know about. But those are the little things that may separate Sam Darnold from having a good and great career.
Yeah, you know... God, why am I drawing a blank here? Thank you. Willie Colon did some work with us here on 98.70. Brian, thank you. I've only had a few sips of coffee this morning. Willie Colon used to do some shows with us. In fact, a great show with me on Saturdays. I was really sad when he left and he went to Barstool. But Willie cannot say enough fantastic things about Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, he adores the man. He loved playing for him for many, 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 many years. So, yeah, I've heard that before. Let's do this. I want to take a look because, you know, it is week 11 and that playoff picture is becoming more and more apparent as to how this is all going to play out. And so, and I'd like to do this moving forward is kind of like tee this up for you and Chris and see if you guys are agree with me or not. So in looking at the AFC, okay, I've got the Bills winning the division and I got the Dolphins getting in as a bye. I've got Pittsburgh winning the division. I've got the Ravens getting in as a bye. I've got the Colts winning the division. I've got the Chiefs winning the division. I've got the Raiders getting in as a bye. So that leaves between the Patriots, the Cleveland Browns, and the Tennessee Titans as that seventh team trying to get in. It's a toss-up for me. Do you agree with that? Or is there a team, one of the teams that I'm saying is a toss-up? Maybe it's not a toss-up for you. How do you see this, the playoff picture right now in the AFC?
I like Tennessee in the South, despite Indy Beam. I just believe in them. And obviously, massive game today. Hope we get time to talk about that Tennessee-Baltimore game because I think it's going to be a great football game. So that would be probably the biggest one for me. And I still think New England, when it's all said and done, is going to be there. You know, they have a very winnable game today against Houston if they do get that win, Anita. And by the way, you know, not much has been made, but there's a great storyline of Bill Belichick and Romeo Crennel, today's head coaches in the Houston-New England game. You know, they go back to the 1980s, both on the staff of those great Giant teams going back a long, long time. So, you know, winning titles in 86 and 90, like, you know, you're going back now and need a 30, 35 years. And it's really neat that in 2020 their head coaches opposing one another. But anyway, assuming New England gets the win today, you know, they're back at 500 with six to go. And, you know, you got to give tip your cap to them despite everything that's happened. And they've really played better football lately. You know, they beat Baltimore. They were 12 yards away from beating Buffalo. And, you know, they obviously beat the Jets when the Jets played very well. So I think New England will be there somehow, some way when it's all said and done. And, again, watch out for them. They get back to 500 today. And, you know, they'll be, what, a game and a half, two games behind both Buffalo and the Jets. And, you know, with six to go, it should be a fun AFC East to watch.
So you're saying you think the Patriots and Tennessee make it in, let's say, over what? Over Oakland or the Ravens or the Dolphins?
Well, I think the Raiders, the Las Vegas Raiders, you know, if they lose tonight, they drop to 6-4. I think Baltimore does get in. I don't think Cleveland does. So I think we could see three teams from the East, and that would kick Cleveland and the Raiders out.
Wow. And I keep on saying Oakland. I know it's going to take a minute. But I think the Raiders are a lot better than what most people think. And I want to say now it was confirmed they're getting like seven defensive players back. Now, I don't anticipate them beating the Kansas City Chiefs 2 weeks in a row. But in looking at their schedule, remaining schedule, it's not very difficult. So I definitely have the Raiders making it into the postseason. And by the way, you could bet on that. That line right now for the Raiders to make it into the postseason is +170, FYI. All right, let's take a look at the NFC. I think we're in agreement here. Only one team is going to come out of the NFC East. For me, it's the Eagles. Who do you have coming out of there?
Oh, boy. I got to go with the Eagles. Boy, Anita, that's hard, though. I mean, you know, it's hard to ignore what happened last week, but I still think in one game they are the best team. I think today got a little bit, as we discussed earlier, I think they got a little bit easier because I think Myles Garrett, you know, there's a handful of players, Nick Bosa, Joey Bosa, who is still working his way back from a concussion, you know, Nick Bosa out for the year. But Myles Garrett's one of those guys that when you play against Cleveland, and I've been in these meetings for years, Anita, you would talk about every play, what's the plan for Myles Garrett? He takes two blockers, and not having him out there today, I think it makes it easier for Philly. So I'm going to agree with you. Let's go with Philadelphia.
Okay, so Philadelphia in the NFC North, you've got Green Bay. I think Green Bay loses today to the Colts, by the way. So I have them at 7-3, but I still think that they're going to win that division. Chicago Bears, they're just
they stink.
You know, I love Nick Foles as a person. I'm always rooting for him. I really am. I'm always rooting for him, but they just their last game was such a letdown. I do believe that the Vikings win today against Dallas and Detroit. Well, they're Detroit. So I think Green Bay is coming out of that division. And then I have the Saints. And I know you and I are going to really dive into the Taysom Hill storyline coming up in the next segment. But, like, I am so intrigued by them. I am, you know, not that you want to see somebody get an opportunity because of somebody else's injury and my heart goes out to Drew Brees. I know what a fierce competitor he is, and apparently there's a report out there that there's even, you know, more rib damage than first expected. This is another report, so he was placed on IR, could be a lot more, a lengthier time out for him. But we saw that this is a Saints team that just, you know, took care of Tampa twice, and a lot of people feel that Tampa could be one of the best teams in the NFL. So I do believe that they win the division. I think Tampa gets in as a wild card. And then I wouldn't be surprised if all Seattle, the Rams, and the Cardinals, all three of those teams get in the postseason. So yep. So it would be Seattle. It would be Seattle, the Rams, the Cardinals, the Saints, the Buccaneers, the Packers, and the Eagles. That's who I have making it into the postseason in the NFC.
Yeah, I agree on the North. I like the Packers. I don't see anybody else getting in there. In the South, I like the Buccaneers. I think the Saints survive and get into the playoffs. We probably see what's going to happen there a little bit differently. I think in the West, I could see all three of those teams getting in, Seattle, L.A., and Arizona. But I will say this. If a team's going to, of the three right now, the way they're just playing, throwing out their records, Anita, I would rank them Arizona, Rams, and then Seattle. I just don't trust that Seahawk defense, and that could keep them out. So, you know, we'll see how this goes. But I think, you know, let's say it's Philadelphia and Green Bay. Let's assume that New Orleans and Tampa both get in, and that leaves, you know, two teams from the West, and I think it's going to be, in my opinion, the Rams and the Cardinals.
Well, let me ask you, because I was really surprised. I thought the Cardinals were going to win that Thursday night game this past Thursday. Of course, they didn't. They activated Snacks Harrison like at 5 o'clock that afternoon, and he came in, and he was a force to be reckoned with on that defensive line, and I think not enough was really discussed or talked about in regard to Dunlap coming in at the trade deadline and you know, bolstering that defensive line for Seattle. I know their secondary is nothing to write home about, but with those two guys active, you know, they definitely caused some issues, especially with that Cardinals offensive line that was just horrendous on Thursday night. Did anything in what you saw Thursday night with Seattle change your mind in regard to their defense? Because it did for me, at least a little bit, Mike.
Yeah, you know, Dunlap, yeah, a little bit. But again, I just think their corners aren't playing great. And Snacks Harrison is someone, you know, I signed when he was a free agent, when he first came out back at the Jets. I really like him a lot. But, you know, they're not getting the production out of the guys like L.J. Collier. They really haven't replaced Frank Clark since he was traded. I mean, if we're just looking at it, you know, they had Clowney. He's not there anymore. And I just don't know if they're going to have the pass rush despite that one play by Carlos Dunlap. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out. But I just think of those teams, the way they're playing, the third best team right now is in that division is Seattle. The other thing that we're not talking about, Anita, and I really think this is has a chance to be a true statement. You know, have we seen Drew Brees play his last game? Like, isn't there a chance that we'll never see him play again? Everyone that I know and talk to believes this will be it for him. And, you know, if I'm him at his age with what I've earned, with, you know, if those reports are true of having upwards of 11 different fractures or cracked ribs, like, his career really may be over.
Yeah, and it really would be sad that, you know, it would go out. He would go out like that, especially the last 3 years and how close the Saints have gotten to make it to the Super Bowl, let alone win a Super Bowl. And there's been just, the ball has not bounced their way. They got some really horrible calls from the refs. This was going to be the year. So, you know, that storyline would be extremely sad if that was the case. But what we do know is, like, hasn't he already agreed to, like, a very lucrative broadcasting deal? Like, don't we know that this for sure is his last year, right? Like, that's already been confirmed, no?
I believe, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of speculation about it. So, yeah, it could be over for him. You know, Hall of Famer, great career, second-round pick from Purdue University, starts off at the Chargers, and but for Philip Rivers hold out his rookie year, you know, may never had the career that he was going to. people in Miami still talk about the fact that he fails his physical when he goes on a visit there. Has really had a tremendous career, and I would think he'll be a great broadcaster as well.
You said you want to talk about Tennessee and the Ravens. This is an intriguing game, a very important game for both these teams. As we know, a revenge game for the Ravens, because the Tennessee Titans were the team that kind of ousted them last year when a lot of people thought that they would go to the Super Bowl and represent the AFC. The Ravens are favored by 6.5. Here's the thing in this game that I'm really intrigued by, and that is, you know, last week we saw the Ravens go up against the Patriots, and they ran a very simple offense with a fullback and gave the ball to Harris, and they just ran all over the Baltimore Ravens. Calais Campbell is not expected to play today, so that's a big hit to the defensive line of the Baltimore Ravens. And let's be honest. I mean, with all due respect to Harris and how well they ran the football, the Patriots, who can compare to Derrick Henry? I don't think anyone. I wonder if the Tennessee Titans are going to take a page out of the Patriots playbook from last week and just run at the Baltimore Ravens, keep Lamar Jackson off the field. This game is really interesting to me. Again, Baltimore Ravens favored by 6.5. How do you see this playing out, Mike?
Yeah, it's a game of matchups. And, you know, for me, it's no Brandon Williams, no Calais Campbell. It's a bad, bad matchup for the Baltimore Ravens. And look, you think Patrick Queen wants to sit in there and take on, you know, fullback leads and power? Don't think so. So I think because those are two significant injuries, I think the line of scrimmage is controlled by Tennessee, and I think they win again today.
We've got some calls that folks want to chime in. Before we do, another game that I find really, really interesting, I know we touched on it just a second, and that is the Las Vegas Raiders and the – I got to get used to that. I'm just going to go with Raiders. The Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs. We saw them do it the first time around where the Raiders beat them, but they played a near-perfect game, right? Like, Derek Carr had, like, a ridiculous QB rating. He threw the ball long. He connected with Henry Ruggs twice for 118 yards and a touchdown. The Raiders' defense were able to contain Patrick Mahomes. They were able to take away the deep coverage. Like, just on really on both sides of the football, the Raiders played near-perfect football. And that's what you need to do to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Now they're coming in a week where, you know, they're dealing with all this COVID stuff. I want to say 10, 11 of their defensive players didn't practice this week because of COVID. Reports are that they're getting at least 7 of them back for the game. I don't think the Raiders have a chance. And especially, you know, added bulletin board material here. Let's be honest, with the whole, you know, circling the wagons with the bus ride around Arrowhead after the Chiefs, after the Raiders won. So how do you see this Sunday night playing out?
Yeah, look, Kansas City's lost one game in a year. Patrick Mahomes, he's having an incredible year. You know what's unfair is a lot of times in the media, and I'm as guilty of this as anybody, so I am not placing blame here, but we live in a world of expectations, and that's just the sad reality of it. So, for example, like Miami's having a really good year. Brian Flores should be considered coach of the year, but so should Mike Tomlin, so should Andy Reid, but because of expectations, it'll probably go to Brian Flores. You know, like, think about the year right now that Patrick Mahomes is having, Anita. He has 25 touchdowns and one interception. Like, that's hard to do at practice. Like, that is really remarkable. So, I guess the short answer is I like Kansas City, and I don't think we talk about Mahomes enough. I really do think in a sport where we have world-class athletes and the best of the best, I really do think we're maybe looking at the closest thing. Like, if you think about Tiger Woods, you think about Michael Jordan, I think that's where Patrick Mahomes is. I think he's, from an ability standpoint, so much better than anybody else playing the sport right now.
He really is remarkable, and he seems pretty perturbed about the bus lap around Arrowhead Stadium. Not the kind of guy that you want to give bulletin board material to, that's for sure. We talked about the Jets going 0-16. There's also a bet out there, Mike, that the Steelers can go 16-0, and you could get that at plus 750. They've got some tough games ahead on their schedule. Not today against the Jacksonville Jaguars, but Ravens on Thanksgiving night, Washington at the Bills, Cincinnati at the Colts, Cleveland. Do you think the Steelers team can go 16-0, Mike?
No, I don't. And they've done a great job. I mean, here's another, you know, we don't ever talk about Mike Tomlin enough. Guy's never had a losing record. You know how hard that's to do in a salary cap era with the amount of injuries they've had and players that are in and out? He's had, you know, just an incredible, incredible season. You know, they play Baltimore in a short week. They still have to go to Buffalo. There's a lot of different things that they, they could lose at the Browns. I think I can see at least three or four teams beating them. And even though they have the Colts at home, Colts are still playing good defense.
800-919-3776. Let's go out to your questions. Let's bring in Tony in Yonkers. Tony, you're up. Welcome in.
Hey guys. I want to say your shows are awesome. This is my first time making a call.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and I just had two fantasy questions. It's actually more for my cousin, so I figured I'd get your input.
Okay,
he has
go ahead.
One. He's got one. He's got to pick three out of five receivers because he likes to keep a receiver in the flex. So he's got Julio Jones, Michael Thomas, Terry McLaurin, Justin Jefferson, and Chase Claypool, and it's a PPR league.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think you go, you know, dance with the girl you brought to the dance, and let's be honest, it's the first three guys that you mentioned. So thank you for your phone call. Appreciate it. Justin Jefferson and Claypool, you know, hashtag champagne problems if you got all five of these wide receivers, let's be honest.
Hey, Anita,
Sure.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I got a question for you. Who do you think got the better of the trade between Buffalo and Minnesota?
Tell me, with what players?
So, Stephon Diggs for basically a first and a...
Oh, yeah. I think Stephon Diggs, because he's such a crucial... I've talked about this year. You know, the Buffalo Bills play 11 personnel more than any team in the NFL, and it's so imperative to have Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, and John Brown active for Josh Allen. When one of those three guys are not active, Josh Allen is off. And so it's just, and then you add in Gabriel Davis, who, you know, every now and then surprises you. He'll connect for like, you know, 50, 60 yard reception. He stretches the field along with Diggs. So I think Diggs is such a crucial part of that offense in allowing Josh Allen to thrive and have as much success as we've seen him have this year. Agree or disagree?
Well, you know, it's funny. At first, I was against the trade. Then I was for it. And now I think I'm against it again, because what Stephon Diggs is going to make in 1 year, Justin Jefferson is going to make in 4 years. Justin Jefferson already has 42 catches, 3 touchdowns, and averages 18 yards a catch. So from a team-building standpoint, while initially you would say, boy, you know, Diggs has done great for Buffalo, which he has, if you think about all the resources and other things you can do because Jefferson's on a rookie deal and Stephon Diggs is being paid at the top end of the market, I think when you look at it and you can consider their contracts, I really like what Minnesota has. And I think Jefferson has a chance to be really good. I think the more interesting part of the story, to be candid, is how does Philadelphia take Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson?
Yeah, they loved Reagor. You know, another thing is, how does the Green Bay Packers take Jordan Love over Justin Jefferson? I think that we're burying the lead here. I mean, that, you know, to me, that's the bigger storyline. And obviously only time will tell if Jordan Love can turn into this quarterback that obviously they must be in love with, no pun intended. But you see what Justin Jefferson's able to do in Minnesota. My goodness gracious. You imagine him playing opposite Devontae Adams and Alan Lazard, who's expected to come back today. Boy, we're sitting here saying the Green Bay Packers are going to win their division. Might not even be close at this point if that was the case. 800-919-3776. Let's go to Vinny in Long Island. Vinny, welcome in.
I called last week about it was the must win. He said, go Mooney. I still won, but I need help this week versus the number one seed. And my question for my flex, Gio Bernard, Adrian Peterson, or Amari Cooper?
I love Adrian Peterson today, and I had Cynthia Freeland on the show. Who's your third one?
Amari Cooper.
Yeah, I had Cynthia Freeland on the show earlier. She's a huge Detroit Lions fan, and with no DeAndre Swift, he's out unfortunately because of. And thank you for your phone call, Vinny. He's out because of a concussion. She loves Adrian Peterson, and in Cynthia, I trust. She kind of has her finger on the pulse of that team better than most. So I'm playing Adrian Peterson in a lot of DFS lineups. And I actually went out and I picked him up on the waiver wire and I'm starting him in one of my leagues. So I would roll with Adrian Peterson there. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We come back. Mike and I are going, obviously, the biggest storyline heading into week 11 in the NFL is Taysom Hill. And a little bit earlier, we heard from Mike Westhoff. When we come back, Mike and I will dive into this topic. This could be a very exciting day for Taysom Hill and Sean Payton, and to see how they just might take the NFL by storm. Welcome back to New York Game Day. Anita Marks and Mike Tannenbaum. So, Mike, obviously the big story this week is Taysom Hill and him getting the start in New Orleans. So, first and foremost, are you surprised, let alone shocked, with this decision from Sean Payton deciding to go with Taysom?
Yeah, I think context here is really important, Anita, in terms of Taysom Hill has been there for a number of years. Jameis Winston, this is his first year. And something I have the privilege of talking about every Sunday with you is all things the NFL. And again, there was no offseason program, no training camp. And if Jameis Winston is number three, I mean, he probably got very, very, very few reps between Drew Brees and Taysom Hill. So this makes a lot of sense to me, at least short term. And by no means do I think this could be the end of the road for Jameis Winston. I think this is just the pragmatic aspect of what we're dealing with in 2020.
You know, I find it interesting. Again, I'm going to have Mike Westhoff on the show around 1:30 this afternoon, and a lot of my quote-unquote insight on the situation comes from Mike Westhoff. I speak to Mike Westhoff quite frequently. He's probably one of my favorite humans on the planet. And so that's kind of how I got to know Taysom Hill. And in fact, at one point in time when he was the special teams coach for the Saints, he asked me to do a story on Taysom Hill. And so I went to, and again, I don't recall if it was a Jets game or a Giants game, but the Saints were in town and I went there. I went to the game. I sat down. I spent like a good 30 minutes with Taysom Hill. The young man is just exceptional. He's just an absolute sweetheart. I couldn't be more thrilled for somebody. But it's evident to me that Sean Payton sees so much potential in him. And this is a project. This has been a project for Sean Payton for over a year now. And the game plan has been for over a year now that once Drew Brees decides to enter that broadcast booth that he's getting paid so handsomely to do next season, that the reins were going to be given to Taysom Hill. So this decision is not a surprise to me, as it is, I think, to most people. But have you ever been in a situation where you've been around a head coach that just falls in love with a player and is just dead set on doing everything that he can to make that player sensational?
You know, Anita, that's really the job of a head coach, is to get his players better. That's job number one. And I'm sure Sean Payton's trying to invest in all his young players. But look, they put themselves in a good position. They got a aging veteran in Drew Brees, and then they have, you know, two really interesting guys in Hill and Winston. And you know, Taysom Hill is a dynamic athlete who can not only get the ball down the field, but he's hard to tackle. He reminds me a little bit of Tim Tebow, Anita, because he's big, he's thick, he's hard to tackle. It should be really fascinating to watch him play and see what they do. And again, like, I think we have to be measured here in terms of, you know, Jameis Winston hasn't been there that long, so again, I don't think his story is over, but boy, I think the eyes of the football world are really intrigued by what will Sean do with him. I think it's probably safe to assume, Anita, that we'll see him outside the pocket a lot. I think we'll see a lot of gadget plays, getting the ball on the perimeter to Michael Thomas, Kamara. So I think it's going to be a really fun and exciting game to watch.
Oh, I as I said on Daily Wager yesterday, buckle up, grab your popcorn. This is going to be fun. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the Atlanta Falcons side. Right? Like Raheem Morris, he's taken over from Dan Quinn. And ever since he has, listen, they're 3-1. They should be 4-0 if it wasn't for a bonehead play by Todd Gurley, let's be honest. You know, this is a team that has played a lot better. They're coming off of a bye. Julio Jones is expected to be healthy. But here's the thing, you know, and I don't know, obviously, you know, nobody really knows like how this team has prepared for this matchup, because the world was expecting Jameis Winston. I want to assume, we know what happens when somebody assumes, but I'm still going to assume that the Atlanta Falcons and ran their scout team as if Jameis Winston was winning, was running a Teddy Bridgewater Saints offense. And I'm sure they spent some time trying to prepare for Taysom Hill, but I would imagine that the majority of the time they spent preparing for Jameis Winston. With that being said, and then this announcement coming out tomorrow, and then, of course, as we know, you've got the travel day today. Not a lot of time to pull the troops back in and say, let's redo this. What do you think is going through the mind of the Falcons right now? And because this defense really doesn't know what to expect, how much of a concern or how worried do you think they're going to be tonight, not knowing what's to come tomorrow?
Well, typically what happens is when you're in a situation like that, you play a little bit more vanilla. So I expect a lot of zone, a lot of cover two, a lot of cover three. I think they'll have a lot of eyes on the quarterback just in terms of, you know, staying vanilla, making sure that they can keep Hill in front of them, contain that running game. And, maybe they'll have more exotic things in the second half or pull some things for him. But when you're in a situation like that, Anita, it typically makes the defense play a little bit more generic, at least initially. And I'm sure Raheem and the Falcons, I'm sure they've had a plan on both. I don't think it would be you know, really, it would be irresponsible not to.
Two more games I want to touch on with you really quick before I let you go. One is the Kansas, and they're both the night games, the Sunday and the Monday night game. The Kansas City Chiefs going up against the Las Vegas Raiders, and the Raiders being, you know, decimated with the COVID-19. What, 11 defensive players weren't able to practice this week. I spoke to Paul Gutierrez yesterday on my show, and he doesn't sound very optimistic in regard to the Raiders being able to do much against Kansas City, especially. And I brought up the bulletin board material, right? Like Gruden and the Raiders bus doing laps around Arrowhead Stadium, which definitely irked Andy Reid. And more importantly, I don't think you want to tick off Patrick Mahomes. So your thoughts on this Kansas City Raiders game?
You know, it's a rivalry game. You know, it's a division game. It's an important game for both teams. But I think one of the things that we should even get into, you know, more, Anita, in terms of over the coming weeks is, you know, there's only one team with a bye. So when you look at the difference between Pittsburgh and Kansas City, there's one loss between the two of them. And this is as much of a out of a race for the bye as it is for the AFC West. So this is an enormous game for both teams. And I expect Kansas City to play really well. And I think we'll get their A game tomorrow.
And last but not least, in regards to the Rams and the Bucks, there's been a lot made with the Rams losing. And why is his name escape me right now? Whitmore, Andrew Whitmore, right? Their tackle. But Ali Marpet, who's also known as a top four guard in the NFL, has not passed concussion protocol. I was texting with Jenna Lane. She doesn't anticipate him to play on Monday night because of the concussion issues. To me, that's an even greater hit on the offensive line on the Tampa Bay Bucs side, because now you've got a subpar offensive line going up against an Aaron Donald who has never sacked Tom Brady in his career and is eyeing to do so not once but several times on Monday night. Your thoughts on how you think this Rams-Bucs game is going to play out, considering that there's a chance that Ali Marpet will not be active for Tom Brady on that offensive line?
Yeah, Anita, as usual, you're making a great point, which is like, here we are talking about all these great weapons that, you know, Tampa has, and we're talking about a guard, and I think that's right, because Aaron Donald could ruin the game. So regardless if Marpet plays, they're going to have to double-team Donald literally every play because he can wreck the game all by himself. So I expect Bruce Arians to be, you know, protection-centric. And what we saw in the last couple of weeks, when they don't protect Tom Brady against the Saints, they look awful. And when they do against Carolina, they look dominant. So I expect a much more intelligent sort of protection scheme, starting with how do we defend Aaron Donald.
So I want to remind folks, the Michael Kay Show's 20 in 20 contest continues Monday at 3 o'clock. Only three chances left to score big, so make sure you're tuned in all week long. Tomorrow, the guys are giving away an all-star cookout combo from Kansas City Steak. Includes fillets, ribeyes, strip steaks, lobster tails, and more. It's the 20 in 20 contest brought to you by PC Richardson. I love it. Kansas City Steak, the Bartesian premium cocktails on demand, and of course, 98.7 ESPN.
Everyone's favorite. Can he or can't he?
I'm saying I intend to take bets as soon as possible.
Really just a segment where we talk prop bets and lines.
All right. Chris Canty, unfortunately not here this week, but we continue with the Canter Canty. And just a reminder, these are actual prop bets. These are prop bets that you can go online and you could wager on. We're not making up these totals. We're not making up these numbers. So a fun way that we like to break down the game, can or can't-y, prop bet style. So Mike Tannenbaum fills in for the wonderful and fabulous Chris Canty. Mike, you ready to roll?
Yes, I'm ready to go.
All right, here we go. Let's start with the Jets. Joe Flacco coming in against the Chargers. Again, expectation is that Chris Harris more than likely will play. Not 100% yet, but we're expecting him to play back in that secondary for the Chargers. Over under 241.5 passing yards and 1.5 touchdown passes. Can or can't he?
I'm going to say can. I know those are big numbers, but I think it's going to be a high-scoring game today, and let's go over on both.
Do you like over on both? Okay. Running backs. I say yes. I think the Jets are going to be playing from behind, and the fact that you've got a healthy wide receiving core now with Crowder and Mims and Perryman, I expect P. Ryan to be utilized. You know, Joe loves to hit the running backs out of the backfield with those quick dumps. So I'm with you. I say yes. In regard to the running backs, what we heard prior to the Jets going on a bye was that they were going to be more committed to P. Ryan moving forward because they have to see what they have in him. Therefore, Frank Gore, over under 32.5 rushing yards. I'm going under there, but P. Ryan, over under 48.5 rushing yards. And you can also bet that he scores a touchdown, Mike, at plus 185. So your thoughts on P. Ryan's rushing yards, and do you think he scores a touchdown? Can or can't he?
I say he can't. I think this is going to be a game that's going to be more played in the air, passing just what we had just talked about, just from a standpoint of assuming no Joey Bosa. And I still like Frank Gore, so I don't think P. Ryan will be a big factor in the run game. Chargers still, I think, do a better job against the run than the pass. So I look for a big game for Flacco, but not as much from P. Ryan.
Interesting. 48.5. I just don't think that's a lot. I think the handicappers here are expecting Frank Gore to get more playing time than what I think the Jets are going to do. So I'm actually going to go over here. Maybe a bottle of wine between us. Let's just call it an even 50. If P. Ryan puts up more than 50 rushing yards, I get a bottle of wine. If he puts up less than 50 yards, you get a bottle of wine.
Deal.
Deal? Done. All right, so I'm gonna assume then, we all know what happens when someone assumes, but I'm going to assume, if you're thinking that this is going to be a heavy passing game, Crowder over 58.5 receiving yards, Mims over 46.5 receiving yards, Perryman over 45.5 receiving yards. Are you over on all three of them? Is there one that sticks out to you that you think will be better than another?
Yeah, I would go with the one I like the most probably would be Crowder. Again, just going back to even if Chris Harris plays, he's been out. They traded Desmond King. I think Crowder's a good player. Disappointed that he hasn't been able to play. I thought that was a good signing. I think he brings a lot of juice, and I think that's going to be a difficult matchup for whoever has to defend him from the Charger perspective. So while I like all of them, and I like Flacco, I in particular like Crowder today.
Okay, so you like all of the receivers to go over the receiving yards, but if there was one you were going to put your money on, it would be Crowder over 58.5 receiving yards. On the opposite side, we've got Justin Herbert going up against, I don't know, can we call it a no-name defense in a negative way? I don't know. 284.5 passing yards, over under 2.5 touchdowns. Can or can't he against this Jets secondary, Mike?
Yeah, you already talked about it quite a bit, Anita. To your credit, you know, they're going to probably be playing with, what, Lamar Jackson out there. No Desir, no Austin in all likelihood. So, you know, just good matchup. Chargers have talented receivers and Mike Williams, Keenan Allen. So look for a big day for Justin Herbert on the field statistically, presumably for a Charger win. So I like the overs for Herbert.
So do I. Balazs, we just heard from Scotty Kaplan, who's out there in ESPN in L.A. He's all over Balazs. Here's another. This is to me, this kind of looks like easy money here. 53.5 rushing yards, Mike. Can or can't he?
Yeah, I like the over. I drafted Kalen. He's a great kid. He's big. He's strong. He's fast. Has to work on his pass protection. But I think that's a number that he could get to today.
Keenan Allen, over 80.5 receiving yards. Mike Williams, over 52.5 receiving yards. I also like Mike Williams scoring a touchdown here, plus 146. Hunter Henry, over under 41.5 receiving yards. Out of those three guys, who do you like the best?
Probably Hunter Henry. Think the Jets are going to struggle with that today, and I think over time he'll become more of a security blanket for Herbert. So, again, expect a big day for Justin Herbert and like Henry as well.
All right, this has been Can or Canty, Mike Tannenbaum style. We come back. It's Anita's Locks of the Week. Went 2-1 last week, so I'm 13-6 on the season. I know it's not a winning record, but I still have a few more weeks to get ahead. All right, it's time for Locks of the Week, baby, brought to you by Merle Edge self-direct. You ready, Mike? You ready for this? Boom.
I am locked and loaded.
I love it. Again, went 2-1 last week. I'm 13-16 on the season. I know nothing to write home about. Mama doesn't have a lot of new pairs of shoes, but we're trying to change that narrative. All right, so first and foremost, probably my best bet today is I love this Dolphins team. What's the line right now? Very interesting. The line opened at 3, which was a little perplexing. Kind of big red flag there, like 3, are you kidding me? Is it going to be the Denver Broncos? I'm thinking maybe altitude. I don't. There was at the beginning of the week, there was some speculation that Tua was dealing with some kind of foot issue. You're down there in Florida. Maybe you heard the same thing. That line, 95% of the public money is all over the Miami Dolphins. Typically, I like to stay away from that. But I just, you know, I think I've buried the lead here, and the lead is this Dolphins defense. They're just so damn good. They play this zero blitz scheme. They bring in their deep safety. They disguise a lot. Justin Herbert didn't know what was coming or going last week. And then now you've got Drew Lock. He's dealing with some rib issues. Not sure if he's going to last all 4 quarters. Denver's offensive line ranked 28th in the NFL. This is a Miami Dolphins defense, top 5 in scoring. Special teams gets the ball and turnovers. Number 1 special teams efficiency. I just think the Dolphins are the better team on all 3 levels. And so, you know, I think the Dolphins win here by at least a touchdown. That line's 4. I'm not shy about it. I'll lay it. What are your thoughts?
It's interesting. You know, one of the things that I've been really fascinated about this year, Anita, is who's benefiting from home field advantage. Like, Denver used to be one of those places where it was a hard place to play, and mm-hmm. Minnesota, Seattle, I think, are the others that come to mind. I just think this is going to be a close game because this is the one place where altitude could make a difference. If Drew Lock wasn't playing, I'd see it even as a more significant advantage for Miami. But I think this is going to be a game where Miami's clearly the better team, but I think it's going to be close. So I probably see the result different from the line standpoint.
It's probably my favorite bet on the table. My second bet is the Colts. And what's that line right now? I got them at -1. It jumped up to like 1.5 earlier in the week. It's a 1.5. So the Colts -1.5 at home. They're coming off extra rest. Keep in mind, the last time they played was Thursday night in week 10, so it's kind of like a bye week for them. Rodgers, in his 6 starts, his last 6 of his starts this season have been against defenses that rank in the bottom 10 in pass defense. The Colts, number 1 defense in the NFL. They've got a 25% pressure rate, and that's without blitzing. That's with them only sending 4. And Aaron Rodgers, as great of a quarterback as he is, he's barely averaging 5 yards per pass attempt when getting pressured. And Darius, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Darius Leonard. If you feel that he's the best linebacker in the NFL, a few weeks ago Rodgers came out and said that Fred Warner from the 49ers was, and Darius Leonard, that rubbed him the wrong way. So he's had this date marked on his calendar, pinned in, not penciled in, pinned in. He is going to try to get after Aaron Rodgers today. Meanwhile, on the opposite side, not that I'm a big Phillip Rivers fan, but Green Bay, their pressure rate is 28th in the NFL. They barely get pressure on the quarterback. You give Phillip Rivers time back there. He's got an above-average offensive line, and I love Michael Pittman Jr. I'm wearing my Michael Pittman Jr. shirt today on Sunday. I love this kid. Loved him coming out, and this will be his 3rd game back off of IR. I'm expecting a big day from him today. So I like the Colts here -1. But before I get your thoughts on this game, I'm curious to get your thoughts on Darius Leonard. Do you think he's a better linebacker than Fred Warner?
Boy, I like both of them. I'll take it a step further, which is when you look at Bobby Okereke and Darius Leonard, the way we've talked about KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner for years, I think that's what we're looking at with those two guys. So, you know, individual matchups, Fred Warner is really good, very talented, great range. I think that's close. I probably would take Warner over Leonard, but I love the combination of Leonard and Okereke.
Well, like I said, Leonard is pretty ticked off that Drew made that comment. So watch that, Matt. Let's see what happens with Leonard today, if he can get after. He's got a few sacks already this season. And last but not least, I'm going with a 2-team teaser. I'm going to tease the Eagles up to 8.5. against Cleveland. Cleveland on the opposite side of getting healthy. In fact, no Myles Garrett today. Weather conditions are going to be bad. Yes, they're going to have to run the football, but Wyatt Teller, their offensive guard, is dealing with a calf issue. From what I understand, he's going to give it a go, but he's not 100%. Meanwhile, the Eagles are getting healthier. They get Zach Ertz back. He's expected to be active today. Alshon Jeffrey, his second game, plethora of wide receivers. And this is, let's be honest, this is a must-win game for the Eagles. They're coming off of a loss against the Giants. They got destroyed on Sports Talk Radio and with their fans in Philadelphia. So I just think this is a really good spot for the Eagles, and I like that I get a chance to tease them up to +8.5. And then I'm going to pair that, Mike, with, brace yourself, the Rams on Monday night. I'm going to tease the Rams up to +10. Follow me here. So much is being talked about Andrew Whitworth not being there, and I get it. You know, golf, not great under pressure. But I'm more concerned with Ali Marpet, and Pro Football Focus has him rated as the fourth best guard in the NFL. He's doubtful. I've been texting with Jenna Lane all week. She doesn't expect him to play. Boy, that opens the door for Aaron Darnold, who does not have a sack against Tom Brady his entire career. He cannot wait. He is licking his chops right now, especially if Marpet can't go. This is a Rams team, 31 sacks on the season, 6 sacks against Russell Wilson. And come on, we know Tom can't move like Russell. And also, this is a Rams secondary. They've given up one or fewer passing touchdowns in 7 of their last 9 games. So they have the tools and the talent to really contain the weapons that Tom Brady is working with. I just think the stars align properly. And if I could, I think the Rams win outright, but if I could tee them up to 10, wow, I'm happy about it. So 2-team teaser, Eagles +8.5, Rams +10. Those are my 3 locks of the week. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the Buccaneers beat the Rams. I think they're the better team. And I think Marpet's a really good player, Anita, but I still think that they're going to sit there and Bruce Arians is going to say, there's no way we're going to let Aaron Donald beat us. So quick game, double team. I just don't think, you know, they're sitting there. They're not going to let Aaron Donald win the game. I think it's that basic. So, yeah, I just see that game differently. I like Tampa in that game. It could be within 10 points. And then, you know, in terms of the other game, I do like Philadelphia, especially without Garrett. I think they're the better team. I think Wentz is the better quarterback, and Cleveland's best player is Garrett. So I do like Philadelphia. I could see them winning, you know, somewhat big today against Cleveland.
Okay, so you're not necessarily on the Rams on the money line, which, by the way, you can get at +176. But you do like them. You do like them being teased up to +10. You think that's a good play?
Yeah, although it's interesting. If you said I could either have Jared Goff or Justin Herbert as the next quarterback for the 10 years in L.A., I would definitely take Herbert. I'm not a huge Goff fan. I think when it gets noisy and crowded in there, he doesn't hang in there the way I think he needs to. So, but for getting 10 points, no, I see what you're doing. I agree with that.
Last but not least, before we take a break, again, the big talk is obviously Taysom Hill, and we spent a lot in our second hour talking about Taysom Hill, and we had Mike Westhoff on, and what a great insight and interview that was. God bless Mike Westhoff. But I shared with you there's a ton of prop bets out there on Taysom Hill. I'm just going to share with you a few that I'm already on. I mean, I'm playing probably like 20 prop bet. Like, so you know, I've sent you a photograph of my setup. I've got 3 huge TVs that I set up here in my living room. And so my next door neighbor who lives across the hall from me, she's a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So she's going to come over. I have to commit 1 TV to the Steelers, even though we know, like, chances are that game's going to be over in the second half. And then I have another dear friend of mine who's coming over who's an Eagles fan. So I have to have the Eagles and I have to have the Steelers on. And then typically my 3rd TV, Mike, is typically Red Zone. I'm going to forego the Red Zone today. And this is a big deal. I'm going to have one TV is going to be my Taysom Hill TV. I'm going to have 1 TV designated for Taysom Hill today. That's how much I love this kid, and I can't wait to see what he can do. Here are a few prop bets that I'm playing. Like, again, I'm playing like 20, almost 30 prop bets on it. Hill to score the first Saints touchdown, not the game first touchdown, the first Saints touchdown at 7-1. Over 44.5 rushing yards, over 171.5 passing yards. We just heard from Mike Westhoff. Mike said, this isn't going to be a Tim Tebow offense. This dude could chuck it. How about this? And this is kind of far-fetched. I get it. But listen to the odds. Hill and Matt Ryan throwing for over 299.5 yards. And if they both do it, 45-1. 45-1, Mike.
There's no way. There is no way that Taysom Hill throws for 299 yards. There's no way.
Well, that's why the odds are 45-1. But throw a dollar on it. If he does, you win $45. I mean, that's what's so fun about, like, here's the thing about prop bets, guys. Like, there's also, keep in mind, Marshawn Lattimore is out. He's already been ruled out because of an oblique. 7-1 that both Taysom Hill and Julio Jones score a touchdown. Throw $10 on that. You win $70. That's more likely, I would imagine, than Taysom Hill and Matt Ryan throwing for 300 yards. But nonetheless, it makes it fun. Makes your viewing experience a lot more fun. Hill, and again, you can do a double parlay here. Hill over 171.5 passing yards and Alvin Kamara scoring a touchdown. You can get that at +190. So these are five of, like, kind of my favorite ones. But there's a ton of prop bets out there that you can place on Taysom Hill. And I'm in the over in all of them. I just thought I'd share that with you. Which I think it's just going to be a really fun day watching that game.
Yeah, it will be. I think I see Hill a little bit different. You know, we'll see how he plays today. I mean, the eyes of the football world will be on him. And it's really fascinating because I think Sean Payton will certainly try to mold things that work for him. So I don't think we're going to see the Drew Brees offense. I think we're going to see more of a Taysom Hill offense, which will be a little bit, you know, different than what we've seen with Drew Brees. One other thing that I don't think got enough, sort of like discussion is, Taysom Hill's been a New Orleans Saint for 1,177 days, Anita, and Jameis Winston has been a Saint for 209 days. And I got to think somewhere that's a factor in things, meaning that all the repetitions, like if Jameis was the third guy there, no off-season program, no OTAs, no preseason games, just don't know how much time, that he's been able to have in that system. So taking nothing away from Taysom Hill, who deserves a chance to play, I got to think that's been a factor as well in their decision.
It will be fun to watch. Again, this has been Locks of the Week, brought to you by Merle Edge Self-Direct. Merle Edge Self-Direct helps put investing within reach. Get started at MerleEdge.com/withinreach. Merle Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith Incorporated, registered broker, deal, member, SIPC.
It's Tannenbaum's Bomb of the Week.
All right, just a few minutes left in the show. As soon as we're done, we're going to ESPN Network, but stay tuned. Dan Gross and the crew come your way. Don't forget that Chargers game, because it's on the West Coast, is a later kickoff, of course, around 4 o'clock. But with that being said, Mike, what's your Bomb of the Week, your most outrageous prediction? What you got?
I'm going to go with Tampa Bay Buccaneers 41 and the LA Rams 31. That's my Bomb of the Week.
Okay. Is that really a bomb?
Well,
everybody's expecting that, Mike. Everybody's expecting Tom Brady and the Bucs to just bring it to the Rams.
Can I ask you a question?
You could ask me anything. This is what we do for a living. We're asking each other questions.
So, last week we had the Bomb of the Week, and you took Baltimore, I took New England for a big bottle of wine. Watching the games, the TVs down here in South Florida look like the New England Patriots got the better of that matchup. So I don't know if you shipped that bottle of wine via, sleigh.
I'm keeping tab. I have a tab. Yes, I have a tab because listen, at the end of the season, it's just, then it's one shipping fee. I'm not gonna each week have to pay a shipping fee.
You see, I know,
but as of right now, I owe you like 7 bottles of wine. I know what time it is.
I was going to buy more stock in Amazon Prime. I mean, the way that your shipping charges, I think the best buy of the week would buy Amazon stock.
You're hilarious. All right, we have less than a minute for our score predictions here. What's your score in the game with the Chargers and the Jets?
Well, Anita, like we talked about all show, both it should be a high scoring game, especially given some of those Charger injuries, even if they get Chris Harris back. Let's go Chargers 31, Jets 28. Close game. Chargers win in the end.
Interesting. I've got Chargers 30 and the Jets 17. I got 30-17. That's my score for the Chargers. And I'm using the Chargers as a teaser, by the way. All these sharp money and all these professional handicappers loving the Jets got me. If you're scared, say you're scared. They got me a little scared today. So I'm not laying the 9.5, but I am going to tease them down to 3, 3.5 in some places. Mike, always a pleasure waking up and doing the show with you on Sunday mornings, my friend. Enjoy week 11. You know I'll be texting my butt off with the Taysom Hill. I'm so excited to see this game at 1 o'clock. Brian, thank you so much. Doing a great job producing the show today. I know there's a lot of moving parts. You did a phenomenal job. Your first time producing New York Game Day. Appreciate you, my friend. Everybody, stay safe. Happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy the games today. And we'll be back next week right here on 98.7 ESPN.
New York Game Day with Chris Canty, Mike Tannenbaum, and Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.